The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and today I'd like to welcome to the program Raymond Fleischman. He joins us on the telephone out in Seattle. He's just put out a novel called How Quickly She Disappears. Welcome to the program, Raymond.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Raymond, this is quite a novel, and I understand this is your debut. Is that true?
It is, yeah. So I've written and published a bunch of short stories in the past, but this is my first novel.
Well, I must say, it's an impressive and auspicious debut. You sucked me right in. How did you get the idea?
Well, so in the late 1930s and early 1940s, my grandparents lived in a tiny Alaskan village called Tanacross. And apart from, you know, that kind of basic biographical background, the characters in the book don't really share much in common with my own grandparents and their friends in Tanacross, but I kind of grew up hearing stories about the Alaskan bush from my grandfather and the isolation of Alaska up there, and so Alaska has kind of long held my sort of dramatic interest. So when I sat down to write a novel and to come up with an idea for a novel, isolated rural Alaska was kind of one of the first places that I thought of, just because that setting, I think, is so conducive to dramatic action and to psychological effects on the characters and that sort of thing.
And you open the story in July of 1941, and this is significant because we had not entered World War II yet. Pearl Harbor was yet to happen. It was 6 months away, and things were very different. But the war was raging in Europe, and there was a sensitivity already developing in America and even in remote places like Alaska towards people of German origin.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, that was another thing that interested me about this setting, especially with regards to the time period, is that, you know, there's so many books, of course, that take place during American involvement in World War II, and there's lots of books, of course, that take place during American involvement in World War I, but I hadn't really read too many that were set right before the war, when everything was kind of bubbling up and hostilities were rising and there was already fighting in Europe, like you said. And I think that that was a really interesting and tense, obviously, time period in American history, even before Pearl Harbor, because there was so much fear about what was happening overseas, and there was so much concern, of course, about our sort of inevitable involvement in the war. So I knew that that could have a really interesting, dramatic effect on my characters and their psychology as well.
How did you choose your protagonist? Tell us about her.
Sure, yeah. So she's a German-American woman named Elizabeth Fouts, who's originally from Pennsylvania but moves to this isolated Alaskan town with her husband and their very young, precocious daughter. And I had previously written about the family dynamic in some short stories of mine, though it was, you know, the characters, again, were a little bit different and not really based in any way on the actual people that my grandparents were. But this character, because I had already written about her previously, felt already a little bit familiar to me, and the setting felt a little bit familiar to me. I'd used that short story, I guess, to kind of practice in a way. So I knew that I could write a longer work about her and her psychology and her thinking, because I already felt a little bit familiar with it. So Elizabeth is a bit neurotic, I think. She's under kind of extreme circumstances, and the narrative puts her into kind of even more extreme circumstances. And the book starts, as you said, in July. So this is the time of year in Alaska, in this part of Alaska, when it barely gets dark at all. It's just pretty much day all the time. And this, of course, frazzles people and has its own sort of effect on people's sleep and then related their mental health. So I knew that all of this was conducive to an interesting story.
I love your understatement about how she's put under more duress. just a little bit.
Is that an understatement? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, yeah, she's slightly neurotic. Her marriage is troubled. And
yeah.
Let's talk about the community, because they are outsiders. Let's talk about who makes up most of this community and who these people
sure.
are.
So the village is an Athabascan village, and specifically a Tanacross Alaskan village. The town's named Tanacross, but this is sort of a subset of the Athabascan indigenous people in Alaska. And Tanacross is a very real place. It exists today. It's about 15 miles west of a town called Tok and about 300 miles east of Fairbanks. So it's kind of near the Canadian border and really very, very isolated. And yeah, the characters in this novel moved to this town because the husband is teaching with the Office of Indian Affairs. So he's this government-appointed school teacher for the entire town. The town itself is very small. It's just 55 people. And they're definitely fish out of water in this environment because, again, it's an Athabascan village, whereas they're from Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia.
And it's only accessible at this point in 1941 by flying in, right? I suppose you could hike there, but it'd be quite a hike, huh?
Yeah, correct. So this is at a time in the Alaskan bush when these kind of isolated rural communities were largely kind of self-sufficient. People would hunt and trap. And really their only connection kind of with the outside world was via telegraph and via bush planes that would deliver supplies and fly all over Alaska, kind of making mail deliveries, but then also deliveries of food and supplies and whatever else people might order. You know, you could order things through the Sears and Roebuck catalog if you wanted. It would just have to be delivered by bush plane, and it might take a little while to arrive. So, you know, and that brings me also to the antagonist of the novel, Alfred, who's a German bush pilot who knows a thing or two about Elizabeth and her background.
Ooh, wow, you went there already. Okay, this guy, the mail drop, the mail arrival is the big event of the week, and Elizabeth
yeah.
is anticipating there's a book that's supposed to be coming for her precocious daughter, Margaret, and she needs to go meet the mail plane, and that's how this guy, your antagonist, suddenly drops out of the sky. How did you ever come up with this? How did you come up with this idea?
Well, that's a good question. I knew that I wanted somebody who knew about, without giving anything away, who knew about Elizabeth's background and somebody who seemed a little bit unhinged and somebody who seemed a little bit dangerous, but also somebody who seemed a little bit charming somehow. He's certainly an antagonistic figure, and he's certainly a bad guy through and through. But I think that even bad guys can be sometimes charming, or at least somehow you know that there's something more to them and you kind of want to learn more about them. So I wanted to explore that kind of character and kind of put Elizabeth in opposition to him and sort of see how they get along and see how they sort of compete with each other. And I think that the scenes with those two characters, with Alfred and Elizabeth sort of squaring off, were definitely some of my favorite to write because they were sort of the richest just in sort of the subtext of every single line of that came along with every single line of dialogue that they were saying. Because they're playing, it is this kind of cat and mouse game between the two of them. And so there's sort of deeper meaning to the things that are going on and the ways that they're relating each other to each other because they're both trying to get something out of the other person.
Mm-hmm. The book is How Quickly She Disappears. It was written by Raymond Fleischman. He joins us on the telephone today. And as we are recording this, the book is just officially being published. It's his debut. How excited are you?
I'm really excited. So it's definitely a heady experience, and it's kind of surreal, too. You know, I mean, the life of a writer is you sit in front of your computer all day, every day, for years and years, writing this thing that you're not sure anybody else might ever read. So then all of a sudden, when it's actually out in the world and you can hold it, you know, the published hardcover version of it in your hands, and other people are reading and talking about it, and you're talking about it with other people, It's definitely a thrilling experience, and like I said, kind of a surreal experience too.
And as you noted before we went on the air, Raymond, you're in Seattle for the rollout of the book. You wrote some early drafts while you were living in Seattle, and you also have an event coming up in our area, and this is on Wednesday, January 29th. You'll have a book signing in the Columbus area. You'll be at Gramercy Books in Bexley. That's 2424 East Main Street, January 29th, Wednesday, 7 p.m., in conversation with Lee Martin, the novelist from Columbus, who I'm guessing is one of your mentors.
He is, yeah. So I got my MFA from Ohio State, so Columbus definitely feels kind of like a home away from home for me. And Lee was one of my professors there, and I took a couple workshops with him and even a one-on-one independent study with him about novel writing. And Lee's wonderful, and I'm so excited and honored, really, to have this conversation with him about my book.
He certainly gave you a nice blurb. He wrote, "Fleischman has crafted a novel of the highest huge letters. Suspense! You'll mourn how quickly the pages go by." It's tight. It's very tight. How many years did this take?
So I started it in kind of the summer of 2011, and it took me about a year to write the first draft, which seems fairly fast to me in hindsight. But then after that, I revised it and revised it and revised it, and it went through maybe four or five different drafts. So all in all, it probably took me about 5 years or so to write.
How many years did it take you to sell it?
That's a good question. So it sold pretty quickly. I guess it took just about 1 year or so. You know, my agent went out with it, and we got a lot of interest, and so she took it to what's called an auction, which is where several publishers that have expressed interest in it make offers to buy the book, and we went with a wonderful imprint of Penguin Random House called Berkeley Books. The editor's a woman named Jen Monroe, who's absolutely wonderful, and publicists and the marketing and promotion people and the art and design people at Penguin Random House have all been absolutely amazing and wonderful to work with. So I'm so glad that it's coming out with them. And again, absolutely, you know, just honored that it is.
Congratulations. To hear the word auction is a good thing for me, because I've been doing this for a while, and I have fond memories of the days when, before consolidation of the big publishers, there were a lot more imprints out there, a lot more publishers bidding in auctions. There was a lot more competition, a lot more opportunity. Mm-hmm. And to hear that your book went to auction, it warms my heart.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you, yeah. Like I said, it was an honor and thrilling, too, and just a little bit surreal, the whole experience.
Let's talk more about the story. Let's talk about Elizabeth's husband. He's not a very nice guy. He's not very nice to her.
No. So, they definitely have a troubled marriage, and this is kind of one other thing that puts pressure on Elizabeth as she's dealing with insomnia, essentially, because of the constant daylight, and as she's dealing with this kind of past trauma that she has because of the disappearance of her sister, her twin sister, when they were both children, when they were just young adolescents. And she's never really recovered from this disappearance of her twin sister. So Elizabeth has a lot of pressures pushing down on her, and her marriage is definitely an additional pressure. So, you know, I would say that that's another plot thread within the novel. And eventually they kind of come, this troubled marriage plot thread kind of comes together with a plot thread, too, about Alfred, the primary antagonist, in a way that I hope is satisfying and evocative.
Oh, man. Your book has been compared to Silence of the Lambs, and I can see why. You just opened the Jacqueline door. Thank you very much. I will step inside that door. Jacqueline, the missing twin. I wasn't sure if we were going to be mentioning this. She's a big part of the story. We really get to know her, and she's coming to her sister Elizabeth in dreams. The whole twin thing is so powerful.
Hmm.
Are you a twin? What do you know about twins?
No, I'm not. I did a lot of reading about twins, but thank you for asking, because if you had to ask, I think that I must have done something right.
If I had to ask what, about twins?
Yeah, if I'm a twin, I mean.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, Elizabeth, her sister haunts her. Her sister keeps coming to her. She's obsessed. She wants to know if her sister's still alive. She keeps flashing back. We keep getting these wonderful flashbacks to when they were young, because they were 11 years old when Jacqueline disappeared. And Elizabeth knows a lot more about it than it seems initially. We find out so much more about this whole drama. But by the time we get to the end and we finally figure out some of what's been going on, you really throw the old curveball down the pike there.
Yeah, so the novel occasionally flashes back, as you just alluded to, 1921, to 20 years before the dramatic present, to the year, the summer, when Elizabeth's twin sister disappeared without a trace. And that was kind of actually a later draft addition to the novel. And so I'd already written a handful of drafts in which the plot progressed more or less the same, but I realized that it was really, that the story was really sort of wanting to see Jacqueline, her sister, actually on the page, and for us to meet her in more than just these sort of fleeting, dreamy flashbacks. So there's essentially kind of a novella within the novel that's the story of Jacqueline's disappearance, which of course kind of gives clues to what's going on in the dramatic present and what Alfred might know about her disappearance and what Elizabeth knows but is sort of suppressing and maybe not really thinking about, you know, at the forefront of her mind all that often. So yeah, those flashback scenes to the summer of Jacqueline's disappearance were, I think, some of the most enjoyable sections for me to write, and I hope very enjoyable to read, too.
That was a brilliant editorial decision. Did you come to that on your own? Did someone suggest it? Did you have an editor looking at it at that point? How did you decide to add all that?
I think that I came to that decision on my own, though my agent, Michelle Brower, was tremendously helpful with her sort of editorial guidance throughout many drafts of this book. But yeah, you know, I think that as I realized that I needed to sort of put these actual events on the page and let us sort of see it, I think that that was a decision that I came to kind of on my own, and that emerged pretty naturally, you know, after writing the manuscript and being away from it for a little while and then rereading it, you know, allowed me to kind of come to the page as a reader and to sort of realize, hey, I want to know more about this and actually see this happening as it unfolds. So yeah, those sections were tremendously fun and rewarding to write.
I see you got another enthusiastic blurb from Claire V. Watkins, who we've had on the program. I admire her writing so much. Do you know her?
I do, yeah. So she was a classmate of mine at Ohio State. She was, I guess, 1 year in the MFA before me.
Uh-huh.
So the MFA program's 3 years, so everybody who's kind of in those same 3 years together are pretty close. So Claire's a wonderful writer and a great person, and I was absolutely flattered and thrilled to have her blurb the book, too. So I know her writing's absolutely wonderful, and her short stories and her novel are just great, so people should read those.
Wasn't Donald Ray Pollack in that program? Do you know him?
He was, yeah. So I've met Don a couple times. Uh-huh. He had already finished the program, like, just the year before I got there. So he was still kind of around and would come to events, and had the chance to talk with him a couple of times, but he had already been out of the program. But, yeah, he's another alum of Ohio State's MFA.
He's amazing. In case you just tuned in, my guest is Raymond Fleischman. His novel is How Quickly She Disappears. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your home for independent news and handpicked music. And the Book Nook continues with my guest out in Seattle, who will be coming through our area for a book signing, sort of a homecoming to Columbus, where he got his MFA. And he'll be at Gramercy Books, 7 p.m., Wednesday, January 29th, in conversation with Lee Martin. Gramercy Books is at 2424 East Main Street in Bexley. And I'm guessing you've probably been in that bookstore before.
I've been in there once before.
Okay.
When I came back to Ohio State not all that long ago to speak with one of the graduate classes there in creative writing, and I wanted to pay them a visit. So, yeah, it's a lovely store.
Mm. Well, I was delighted to see that one of the people that you thank, and apparently someone who you admire as a writer, is someone that I've had on the program a couple of times for her novels Under the Harrow and A Double Life. I think Flynn Berry is just tremendous. Who are some of the writers that you admire who have influenced you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Flynn Berry is wonderful. So she, I learned about her through my agent, actually, kind of partway through the composition. Well, I'd already done maybe three or even four drafts of How Quickly She Disappears when my agent, you know, kind of mentioned her in passing and how much she enjoyed her writing. So I checked out her first book and then read her second book when it came out. And yeah, she's absolutely wonderful. I mean, that her ability to blend kind of that literary, psychological, domestic realist writing with kind of aspects of a thriller and a fast-paced plot, you know, is something that's totally enviable. So yeah, Flynn Berry's wonderful. You know, and apart from that, I read kind of a lot of the usual suspects when it comes to talking with writers. You know, I adore Alice Munro and Elizabeth Strout and Andre Debuse III, who, of course, wrote House of Sand and Fog. Sometimes I tell people that I want to be Andre Debuse III when I grow up, which I think is pretty true. So, yeah, people who kind of are definitely still rooted in domestic realism and interested in sort of exploring the trenches of their characters' psychology, but also people who aren't afraid to get a plot moving and to sort of have a few twists and turns in a narrative and to really kind of have stuff happen, you know, to put it simply, in their books. Those are the ones that really appeal to me.
Andre has been on the program, and you're right.
Oh, nice.
He's amazing. And I guess it would be his cousin has made more appearances on the program than any other author.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
You know who his cousin is?
No, I don't think that I do.
His name is James Lee Burke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to talk with Andre Debuse's father?
Too? No. He
Okay.
He was dead by the time I would have had an opportunity. But yeah, quite a story there.
His writing is wonderful, too.
His father had quite a rivalry with his cousin, James Lee Burke, when they were growing up. They were very competitive down in Louisiana.
I don't think that I knew that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, very competitive. I've gotten Jim to talk about Andre quite a bit, but we digress.
Mm.
My guest is Raymond Fleischman, and we're talking about his novel, How Quickly She Disappears. And what do you think about this? You're going out, you're touring. What are your expectations?
Well, I suppose my expectations just are that, you know, lots of people feel inclined to pick up the book and really kind of connect with it. I mean, the most rewarding thing for me is when, you know, in one shape or form, the book, you know, has emotional resonance with somebody. I hope that readers of the book also find it very, very readable, you know, very consumable, that it's something that they can sit down and feel inclined to read pretty quickly. I mean, I've read some reviews and folks on social media that have said that they read it in a couple of sittings, and that's kind of one of the most flattering things that I can hear as a writer, because then I know that I've really done my job in not only making an interesting book, but in making one that has a rhythm and a flow to it that's almost like a piece of music that kind of can progress very quickly and can just be very consumable. And that's what I value the most in writers that I like Truman Capote, I think, has a wonderful sort of musicality to his sentences that just makes his stories and his longer prose work so readable. You know, you want to just read them all in one setting. And so that's the kind of rhythm and flow that I hope to emulate in my own writing. So I suppose, yeah, I hope that lots of people pick it up, but perhaps more importantly, lots of people, you know, blow through it and enjoy doing so.
Well, I did. I read it in just a couple of sittings. And
are
you nervous? Does it make you nervous to think you're going out there and you're paranoid that no one's going to show up at your book signing? I mean, how are your nerves?
Yeah, absolutely. So my nerves are, I'm fairly neurotic too,
uh-huh.
that I have a lot of similarities between Elizabeth, the main character in my book. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, everybody, you always worry that nobody's going to show up and that you're going to be reading to, you know, one or two people or even no people. So there's that, you know, and of course, you know, I'm worried that, you know, people aren't going to like it or they're going to have negative things to say about that. But, you know, the more that I think about that, the more I realize that reading and writing, I think, are just kind of largely matters of aesthetic. So if somebody's aesthetic doesn't match somebody else's, that's okay, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. So the most that you can do is hope that you have an aesthetic that appeals to a lot of people and that they share and that they'll enjoy your book. But that's sort of my mature, you know, the deeper thinking that I do. But prior to that, yes, there's a lot of nervousness and hand-wringing and me fretting about things, so to be sure.
Well, I think it's a wonderful debut. And
thank you.
Your haters are going to hate, you know, your people on Goodreads, your people on Amazon.com. I look at those things sometimes and I just go, wow, anybody's allowed to post on here. You know, sometimes I just go, whoa, you really thought that book that I loved was terrible? It's like, okay, well, whatever. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. It's a free country. Mm-hmm. And I got to the end of your book and I said to myself, okay, is this it or is there more? Is there a sequel coming out? Is there more to the story? Are you thinking about that at all?
Well, I'm thinking about it a little bit, but I'll kind of let readers decide for themselves. You know, I think that a little bit of ambiguity at the end of a story isn't a bad thing. You know, I mean, maybe the kind of best example, and certainly not comparing my book with such a wonderful work as the one I'm about to reference, but, you know, I know, like, for instance, the ending to No Country for Old Men is pretty controversial, and that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but I absolutely love that ending, like so much of his work. You know, I think that if characters are kind of at a conclusion emotionally and psychologically, and if there's some sense of closure there, then I think that that's the primary work that a novel needs to deal with and needs to achieve. So I think that sometimes if a plot seems as though it could go on, you know, certainly it might, but or it might just kind of stay where it is, and the emotional and psychological conclusion is kind of the thing that is most significant. So, but yeah, you know, I've seen a lot of people ask that same question, so I've been thinking about it a little bit, certainly.
Leave them wanting more.
Ah, there we go. Good advice.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is really an impressive book, and I know that we'll have listeners out there who want to meet you and want to read it. And my guest has been Raymond Fleischman. His book is How Quickly She Disappears, and he has an event coming up in Central Ohio. He will be in the Columbus area at 7 p.m. January 29th. That's a Wednesday evening at Gramercy Books, 2424 East Main Street, Bexley, and he'll be in conversation with Lee Martin, one of his professors at Ohio State University, and I should say the Ohio State University. And it's really been a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much, Raymond.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, too. So thanks so much again for having me on and for reading my novel. I really appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.